This reading is from a work in progress, an historical novel called Greywacke, set on the banks of the Waitaki River and in Oamaru, North Otago. The action takes place in January 1881. Everyone seemed to know what was best for him. If it wasn't Henare, it was Ani, or one of the aunties or the elders, all of them full of bright ideas and well-meant advice. This morning, Uncle Rewai, dispirited and grumpy, was certain there was no future for younger members of the whānau on the meagre allocation of land the government had given them. He sat with Kahu outside his whare, on the manuka seat Kahu had made back at Te O Marama when he was first learning how to work with wood, Uncle Rewai showing him how to chip and chisel and buff the manuka until there were no rough edges to catch on anything. Kahu ran his hand along the front now, felt the solid smoothness of the timber, and knew there was still much to learn from the old fellow. Above them, the sky was grey. An easterly came in from the ocean and cooled the greywacke stones at their feet. The dogs lay half in, half out of their kennels, and chickens wandered about, pecking randomly at the base of stones and tussock clumps. Uncle Rewai blamed the new bridge for changing the pace of life in the river community. He wished he'd never been a labourer working to build it. Kahu listened, as he always did, held his tongue and let Uncle run with his thoughts. "Eh, boy, that bridge is all very well. Everyone uses it now, always in a hurry to get somewhere. No one has time for the ferry anymore. So the government does away with the whole damn service, and that's it. That's how we play into their hands. Three trains a day now, carts and buggies and drays, newfangled farm machinery, and them coach services from north to south and back again. Oh, you take your life in your hands when you start across that bridge. We could have done with someone to look out for us when we crossed over on our way to Te O Marama. Hey boy, you still think about that? Them train crew fellas should have gone ahead to warn us. But Te Maharoa, he got the mana to get us across safe and sound. Safe, but shaking in our boots. Uncle Rewai chewed on the inside of his cheek for a bit. I hear they're looking for a keeper, someone to shut the gates when a train is coming, or a mob of sheep, or a threshing machine is being driven across. Aye. It's a long bridge. A gatekeeper could save a few problems. You should give it a go. Kahu laughed. You're telling me I should go and work for the Pākehā now, like Henare and Ani? Oh, not like them, he blurted out. You'd still be able to stay here with us. We need you here, boy. Kahu straightened his shoulders, peered sideways at his uncle. His baggy hand-knit jersey, thin at the elbows, fraying at the cuffs, and back to the dry, hard ground of the village in front of them. Feeling the old familiar pull of whānau, that binding closeness, looking for some way to escape. In the lull before he answered, he heard Uncle Rewai's breathing, coming and going and wheezy puffs. Further out, the lazy scrape and slap of flax leaves stirred by the breeze. He knew he was needed here, but there was no doubt in his mind he had to go. I can't do it, Uncle. You should go talk with the station master at Waitaki North before you make up your mind. He'd be glad of someone smart like you at them gates. Kahu shook his head. Not such a good idea, Uncle. You got a better one? What if I told you I'm thinking of going south to Dunedin? There's a lawyer down there, name of Robert Stout, employs young men to work under his supervision and take the exams to become qualified lawyers. He said I'd be the first Māori. Uncle Rewai swung towards Kahu and cocked an eyebrow. You've been talking already? His tone was accusatory. He replied to my letter. He's prepared to take me on to serve articles, he said, and see how I go. You sure you want to do this? Ruai's words were sharp. Kahu heard the despair in his voice and wondered how much more the old man could take. Should he change his mind, give Uncle the answer he wanted to hear? But what good would it do if he stayed? I'm certain. Law? You want to be a lawyer? I want to understand the law and make it work better for Māori. Ruai laid his forearms along his thighs and stared at the ground between his feet. You'll come back, though. I'll be back. He leaned into Uncle Ruai's shoulder, nudged him with the tip of his own. I reckon a lawyer could do more for the whānau than a gatekeeper. Ruai gave him a quick push upright. Hey boy, you and your smart talk. You keep that up, you might do well as a lawyer. The following weekend, when Ani came home to Koratuaheka, Kahu had gone. She leaned on the fence by Uncle Ruai's garden and watched him hoe around his beans, sliding the flat metal blade carefully through the crusty soil, loosening it, giving each fresh green shoot the best chance of survival. Nearby sat his watering can. Gardening the way Uncle did it was an act of tenderness and optimism. She saw him planting hope for the future, keeping it alive with the only means he had at hand. Everything inside her shifted, overwhelmed by the spiritual energy of this tired old man. The sunshine on her bare arms was warm. The glare made her squint. She didn't speak until he straightened up. Don't know how you get anything to grow in that soil, she said. A bit of karira and a scratch with this. He waggled the hoe at her. And some water seems to do the trick. She ran her hands through her hair, waited a bit for Uncle Ruai to catch his breath. So Kahu's gone to make his fortune. Dunno about a fortune, but I reckon he'll make something of himself. He's ambitious, that's for sure. Runs in the whānau, eh, girl? Ani laughed. I'm doing all right. I like having a regular job. Every day brings some new story, some new angle to explore. But what I love most is the freedom to write about Māori. Māori caught in the middle of Pākehā greed. Our struggles, our successes, our everyday lives. Jack's helpful and the boss is supportive. Her roving glance moved from the ground to the hoe propped on the fence between them, to the broad, flat hands with stubby fingers and broken nails that gripped its manuka shaft, and stopped on Uncle Roo's face. I'm lucky, she said. The smell of salt spray and the humid waft of seaweed compost drifted about them, warm and alive and decaying all at once. Oh, hey, Ruai breathed heavily. Pākehā greed? Lucky, eh? He squeezed his eyes shut. You tamariki have to leave, I suppose, but just where the luck is in that beats me. He brushed the back of his hand quickly over his eyes and took up his hoe again. You're all right, girl. Doing a damn good job. I like them stories you write. They prod the Pākehā right in the puku. Someday they might get their brains in working order and try to put things right with us. Until then, we'll need writers and lawyers to tell our story and argue for our rights. Happen our whānau breeds them smart, he chuckled. In the meantime, I'll keep giving this ground hell with my hoe. We still gotta eat. Ani's story of Uncle Ruai's gardening efforts drew several letters to the editor, ranging from practical gardening hints and the satisfaction of home composting to how to care for your tools and the use of the moon as a planting guide. One indignant letter, signed by a member on behalf of the Ladies' Guild, criticised the government for its neglect of native welfare. Ani smiled when she read it. he mano e roto e te ringa he utu e rua e roto e te nahiri. A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. That one letter could do as much for the plight of Māori as two of her own carefully crafted articles. Good one, Annie, Jack said, sliding the letter back onto her desk. How to make a point without trying. I'll have you know I worked hard on that article. You always work hard, Annie. Jack looked directly into her eyes. I meant that none of us can ever tell what kind of reaction we're going to get from what we write. And that letter neatly sums up the government's attitude to Māori. Annie relented. Every little bit helps, eh? Let's drink to politically engaging letters to the editor. Jack set a mug of tea on her desk and raised his own. Cheers to Uncle Ruai and the Ladies Guild, and to the beautiful lady writer who brought them together. Smiling, she ducked her head. Stop it. I need to get on with my work. As you wish, ma'am. Jack gave a deep mock bow, slurped a mouthful of tea and returned to his typewriter. He banged at the keys for a minute or two, then paused. Annie? You haven't given me an answer yet. Remind me about the question? Her pen stopped moving, but she didn't look up. The dance? At the War Store? Saturday night? Oh, yes, I'd like that. She glanced at him and smiled. I'll call for you at 7:30. He returned to his typing. Minutes later, he plucked the sheet of paper from the roller and, whistling cheerfully off-key, went out the back to find Jim.